Thank you for all of your audience to attend this session. Then this is about Chinese security. Actually, I come from Hong Kong. Would like to share my personal experience on the kinds of censorship to have kinds of East Meets West seminar and talk and much more sharing. Censorship is not just for China, but many countries or many nations have censorship. So that's the reason we like to trigger the research and trigger our ideas how to protect our privacy. For me, then I will talk about censorship overview, the Tor and Bridges from Jacob, and Green Dam and Danvers from John. Okay, there's no national secret. Okay, no. Is any spies, any China spy, Chinese spy, Taiwanese spy? No worries. All things from the internet search. I've got my objective right now, right? Be relaxed, okay? Encourage technical research and technologies in privacy protection and how we do the work out the censorship and share my personal experience with you guys. Okay, let's start. I work on penetration tests, like co-audit and training, and do the malware analysis. If some of you then attend my Bread Hat session about China made malware, then it will be, hope you like it. And also I set up my research group, maybe study the exploit, analyze malware. Yeah. And this is what I've done. Censorship. I will go through this list in 15 minutes. Then in around 50 slides, then you will find it very, have a rhythm, okay? IP blocking. Actually, IP blocking is it's very easy one. It's a white listing. Brad listing, not Brock listing, right? And you will find it in 202. And when you go to Google, then you will find it to the maze. You will find the accessibility color of the... Accessibility color. This is the search engine in China, okay? The Google, the blue one, the same. The fonts is the same. The bar, the location is the same. Yeah. Then we go to google.com, you go to the... teamwen.com. Yeah. These are kinds of DNS poisoning. And use points in the Song file, use the packet ingestion. And another issue is about the root server issues. Especially for me, I tried to connect to some China proxy in proxy servers in Hong Kong, or even I traveled to China. When I go to Facebook, actually we solve the IP 66.220.153 and 115 is correct one. However, you find it here, the 93.46.8M89 actually is a false one. I mean, it's not exist. They do this kind of DNS poisoning. There's a root server in the internet. However, there's a news just in March. It's about when you go to the YouTube, Facebook, and the Twitter, you redirect to the servers in China. And also, after talking about DNS server, we're talking about China product, okay? China made product is great, man. You find an SMTP server. You'll find it, there's a withholding policy. Oops. The policy here, right? Okay. And there's unaudited email. Audit emails. Then you could audit the username. And also the administrator could audit the email, right? And got the usernames. Right? Very good filtering. And of the keywords. Yeah, you put any keywords as you like. This is my first time to find a server, SMT server, with this powerful censorship capability. And some basic UDP and TCP weapon, like TCP traffic and UDP session hijacking and connection time and reset. This I will not go through. It's a basic TCP handshaking, right? Just handshaking. However, when I would like to do kinds of go to this website, appleday.com.hk, it is blocked in China. Once I visit them, they provide feedback me different resets here. Reset my connection. and go to the, it is a type in the Chinese, it's about 1989 democracy campaign in Chinese. Then I got more reset. Yeah, powerful reset. There's a research paper about how to identify forged reset packet. And go to Shanghai, I go to the expo, the Royal Expo, it's a long queue. Anyone go to the China Expo? Wow, great. You need to have a queuing up or have a wheelchair. Then you could have a fast expressway into the expo museum, okay? And I tried Facebook, Google Services, and Twitter, YouTube. I can't go there. But you can only get reset. Oh, this is the site. Actually, you could check whether your site is blocked in China. However, this site is blocked in China. Okay. Okay, let's guess GFW. No, not BMW, okay? It's a Greek firewall. This is a GFW diagram, but not officially. It's guessed by the bloggers. However, these diagrams are put in the individual researchers in China. But they put it like that. However, they put off in a few days. They've got a blacklist, content filtering system, keyword list, okay, and also permanent blacklist, okay. And there's it's a very daily backlist. There's many human resources to spend on the time and to filter, to find the sensitive words. QQ, do you know what is QQ? Like MSN and ICQ. However, very interesting. There's a news from the internet, I got it, that once you install the QQ in a previous version, then it scans your machine. Yeah, it is an antivirus capability, maybe. You scan your executable and scan your document to see whether any embedded shell code. I don't know, but simply they put it like that. Scan all stuff. Yeah, good scanner. And also it's a Skype. It's customized by China's lead by Tom.com. Actually, it's in the Tom.Skype.com. Tom.com has a specialized edition of the Skype. If you want censorship, please go there. Download it, install it. You will enjoy the keyword filtering. Yeah, and there are many 47 million Jester users in China using Tom's Skype. Okay, however, they changed the code. The Tom.com changed the code without the authorization from Skype. The Skype CEO comes to here and say, oh, I'm sorry, we don't know they changed the code. And also, it's another advanced censorship, upgrade your software. Actually, another news is about Beijing, some kind of people for human rights. However, when he tried to log into the QQ and find that there's a box like, please upgrade your QQ. However, his fellows to log in with in his machine and with this one account, but there's no upgrade request. It's quite on one-to-one monitoring customer service. This is a phishing for censorship, right? Asking for the person for upgrade, however the target's friend log in again. No such upgrade prompt. Hopefully I will not get it. An ultimate censorship weapon. Is the 7-Eleven Korean store like the staff there to monitor the blog, monitor the forums in 10 seconds, a few minutes. If you talk about some sensitive thing, then it will be moved. Quite efficient, right? And this is what we are talking about, sensitive words. When you type in this Chinese word, means commemorative, this word, it's blog. Because maybe near the time of some sensitive period for the government. We call this sensitive words. So this is a trendy China language. When your language, maybe your message is blocked, it will place with these sensitive words. Then some China netizen make a joke with the government like, I love Beijing. Actually, this word is tin almond. Then block it out. Then they put a sensitive word. I love Beijing sensitive words. Sunwise is at sensitive words. Our great leader, sensitive words, guiding our community to progress. And another joke is the China growth 6.4%, but it is spot the 6.4. Okay, green dam. Okay. Sometimes this is the one I like a lot because I do the reverse engineering in Hong Kong about to know how it works. about filtering bad content for the youth, like the sex and some bad violence content. And however, some exploits found and cooks are suspected from, Cybercita. Yep. However, the China government would like to install it, but it is banned. Okay, I put the baby face, I test it. It's nude and broke. I put, here, I'm sorry. Here, you find it. I put some wordings about 4th of June, and I write it like in the notepad, it's broke and cute. Yeah. I put the chairman here, and he said, it is an inappropriate pictures. Why? Why censor our China chairman? And also why censor our communist logo? And said, this is a bad pictures. You highlight here. And also I do some kind of very simple US engineering to find it. There's a loss of the executable they are monitoring. Right. QQ is there. Yep, different executables. Email, notepad. The most rich is about when you go to this internet cafe, then you need to register your name. Okay? And also the IPv6 will identify the location and address of the information of those netizens. And another project is about a Rev Chamber project. Actually, it's an open project for how to bypass the GFW in China. And it applies to refer to the paper, research paper about insertion, invention, and denial of service. And it's very good for that they could manipulate the research paper and to do some work. Then what is the theory on that behind that is the send of thin packet from the client to server, and the GFW believes the client has end the connection. Then the server will ignore the thin, and the packet sent from the clients will not be monitored by the GFW. Another point is the client send an ARC packet with incorrect sequence number to the server, and server replies with RST packet to the client, and GFW is cheated, and also the server has terminated. The connection stops the monitoring and censorship. Okay? It's very good. I love this kind of research and application. You can ignore the reset packets and sent by server is no longer affected by the GFW. And set up the GFW and DNS reply fingerprint. If there's the fingerprint is posted by the GFW, we simply filtering out, right? At the normal DNS reply will not be affected. This is the diagram, the flow. Yeah. We like that. These are pictures captured from our local newspaper. Yeah, you'll find it's a battleship. And thank you to this Japanese Edo Star. Because there's a news about in the April in 2010, and actually he go to the Twitter. You could add her right now. And there's over 40,000 netizens would like to go to Twitter and try to bypass firewall on that night. So if there are Edo Star, Radio Star, much maybe helpful to education, rather than I'm stand on the stage to talk about bypassing censorship or working on censorship. If you like the summary, then you do a censorship. Sometimes you are more like to increase the workload, okay? You increase the resources a lot. It may not solve the problem. And my summary is encourage research to inspire, the creativity. And other countries may have the censorship strategy, but we need to have a balance between the privacy and the censorship and build up the business opportunities like the VPN. Most of the Chinese in business there is work on the VPN service, the VPN connection in the company. Okay, it's Jake's part. Thank you.
So before you get started here, Jake, why don't we throw out one of these guys?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Anton, you want to describe what the hell this is?
This is a horse. But this horse is with a very great zoom in piece, this one. Because this horse is called Cholima. It's a grassroots horse. Which is it? In China, there's some kind of flow language, it's a motherfucker. Okay? However, the censorship broke it up. So they use grassroots horse in alphabet and use their communication in the forum. However, their censorship also broke it up. So I'm now trying to throw this cholima to you guys. Okay?
So I want it.
Was it? Yeah, hopefully you like it. But don't do this, don't speak like that to the Chinese, okay?
Okay, so part of the thing that people generally want to do when they're in China is they want to get around the Great Firewall. The thing is that I want to make it, we're giving a talk about China, but I want to be kind of clear. This applies basically to everywhere in the world, including the United States. Depending on where you are, there's some guy sniffing the network or some girl sniffing the network, and they're going to do some nasty stuff. So we have a couple things we need in order to be resistant to these types of censorship attacks. And one of the things that Anthony talked about was the idea of detection, right? So you have a keyword, it goes through, and when you have this keyword on the network is able to sort of detect and react to you. So one of the things you want to have is confidentiality. If you don't have confidentiality, it makes it really extremely easy for someone to especially if they're on the local network, they can intercept anything and they can send resets. They could be much better. They could imitate your TCP stack better. They could imitate your DNS responses better. Depending on the type of attacker, it's kind of varying. So if you're on a backbone, you have a different kind of capacity and you have a different sort of memory, so to speak. But if you're on a local network and you have a very small segment, then there's almost no limit to what you can do. So it's important to not trigger that. So you want confidentiality. And you also want to make sure that when you send a request, the receiver of the request knows that it's exactly what you sent. And so you need integrity as well. And of course, since TCP/IP is, about as open as you can get, you need to make sure that you don't directly connect to the thing that you want to connect to, because if you do that, there's a pretty good chance that the thing you're connecting to, if it's high profile, for example, Facebook, or Twitter or something like this, its actual IP addresses for whatever services that they use for hosting their website, those IPs will actually be in the block list. And so you want to have an intermediary in between. So the idea with Tor is that we sort of provide all of this and then some accidentally as part of being an anonymity system. So I guess some of you have probably used Tor. Any of you? Yeah? Okay. Who here has never used Tor, I guess, is the question. Just
one guy
in the corner? Two guys? All right, cool. Sorry, it's low. How fast do you want to die? So Tor, basically, if we were to go through it, it would take quite some time. There are hours-long lectures where we can talk about circuits and we can talk about cells and we can talk about the crypto and stuff like that. But in short, it allows you to do most of the things you want to do on the internet anonymously, where you get all of these things that I was previously mentioning, right? You want these different properties. You want a lot more than those properties, but those are the most important ones. So you can make DNS queries through Tor, but you don't get the ability to make arbitrary UDP packets. So there's a big difference, right? We have a DNS port, which is like a DNS server, and you can make DNS queries, and those queries will allow you to connect to sites. So if you have to deal with DNS blocking, you can just use Tor for your DNS, if that's the only filter. And if you don't care about anything else, it will transport your DNS requests just fine. And there's a guy who's here, his name is Colin Mulner. We've been working on this project called TTDNSD, and it allows you to make arbitrary DNS requests through Tor by making TCP connections to recursive DNS servers that are upstream, and it uses the Tor network first. And that means that if you're only worried about DNS blocking, you don't have to worry about Tor being slow, because you can do all your DNS resolves and then just connect directly. And unless the IP address is actually blocked, or the content of the messages you're sending are blocked, you can sort of do a hybrid thing to get around some kinds of filtering. Anyway, in short, the way that Tor works is that you have this large network. It's essentially a peer-to-peer network with a series of directory authorities. All of our directory authorities are, of course, blocked in China. So at the moment, a client in China actually has some amount of trouble connecting to the Tor network. So we'll get to that. So the 60th anniversary of some guy making this country, the PRC, happened recently, and when that happened, they blocked the Tor network. So what they did is they downloaded a list of relays, which is the directory authorities give out a list of relays. That's how clients make routing decisions. It's a source-based routing protocol. So the source says, I want to route through three hops. These are my three hops. It builds a circuit. There's cryptographic handshakes that happen in each step of the way, so you know who you're talking to is who you think you're talking to. And the problem is that if you can't get that list, you can't build that circuit, and you can't make your connection. So what the Chinese government did on the 60th anniversary, or 5 days before, is they downloaded that list and tossed it into the Great Firewall. So now we have this problem, which is that if you want to connect directly, you need a new intermediary. You can't just use the normal Tor network as your intermediary to connect to, for example, Facebook or Jabber or whatever you want. So that's a problem. Like, all that crypto, all that integrity and confidentiality you got, it's totally, like, it doesn't matter because you're blocked. So we can't solve this problem very easily, in that you have 2,000 IP addresses, which you have to give to everyone so that they can use this system to be secure. And if you don't give those IP addresses to everyone, you have a partitioning problem, which means that you can give one section of the network to one person and one section to another. And you can't do that in an anonymity system, because if you do, you start to be able to partition users' behavior, and you start to be able to potentially de-anonymize them. So instead of partitioning, what we did is we came up with this idea, which is called bridges. And I'll get to that in just a second. But first, I want to talk about single hop versus multi-hop. So part of the reason that you want to have multiple hops when you're using the Tor network is that you don't want to have a privacy by policy system. So if any of you use a VPN, you know that what you're basically saying to the VPN provider is, okay, you know who I am, you know where I'm connecting from, and you know everything I do online, but you promise you won't write it down. Okay, you wrote it down, you promise you won't tell anyone. Okay, you shared it with your critical business partners, but you won't share it with, like, I don't know, law enforcement or someone that breaks into your systems. Okay, you share it with them for, like, specific things, and, like, you see this path where it goes, and we want to build something stronger than that, because even if the proxy operator is 100% honest and everything is totally solid, they can still be monitored, right? Every machine on the internet is near another one that can be compromised. So you want to make sure that you are not using just a single hop, and you also want to make sure that your traffic is mixed with other people so that it's extremely difficult to sort of, like, decide which traffic is the most interesting. And hopefully that can be helpful to you. And the way that Tor tries to avoid this type of surveillance is that we know that there's a correlation attack, which is that incoming traffic and outgoing traffic can be correlated, and then you can de-anonymize someone. So if it's just a very small network, like a VPN provider, that's trivial. If it's a global network that spans every country in the world, that becomes very difficult to block and very difficult to surveil. And even if every country was cooperating legally, it's still technically very difficult, but they're not cooperating legally, so it's also very socially very difficult. So bridges are how we solve the Chinese blocking problem. This is also how we solve it in Iran and in a number of other countries. And, you know, I'm pretty happy to say, and kind of proud, most of the bridges that I've seen are actually run by Americans and Germans. There are some people from Sweden, a lot of people from Sweden actually, that run relays as well. But most of the bridges that I've seen are actually in the United States and in Germany, which is pretty awesome. I mean, people here really care about free speech. It's very inspiring to see that. So what a bridge is essentially a relay, just like the relays that are in the directory authority. So you can do cryptographic operations with them, and you can send them data and build circuits and attach streams. But the difference is they're not in the directory at all. So they don't exist, basically, as far as anyone else is concerned. So you need to connect to the Tor network, but you don't want to have a privacy by policy system. So what you do is you connect to a bridge that maybe I run for Anthony. Like, if I ran one in California, I don't tell anybody about it, but I tell him, maybe by communicating with him in some other way, over chat or something. He can connect to me, but he doesn't want to trust me with all of his sensitive information. So he connects to me, and then from that, Tor automatically uses that bridge to bridge into the Tor network. And now he's in the Tor network, and he doesn't have to trust me. And the Tor network doesn't know he's coming from China anymore. So it's extremely difficult to target him. So interesting thing here is that when these blocking events happen with China, they harvest this information. So we have two types of bridges. We have public bridges and private bridges. Public bridges are essentially just like relays, except instead of going to a directory, they go to what's called the bridge authority, or the bridge DB. And we have a website, bridges.torproject.org, which will give you bridges. And the way that works is that we have this hash ring, essentially. And if you are coming from a certain set of IP addresses, you're in one section of the hash ring. And if you are sending an email to bridges@torproject.org, you again enter the hash ring in a different position. And every time you make a request, you enter in the same position. So you always get the same bucket of IP addresses. So no one party can easily harvest the entire hash ring of data. I mean, it is, of course, possible, for example, if you have like 10,000 Gmail accounts to send 10,000 requests and get them. But what we're doing is offloading that work so that they have to break Google's CAPTCHA instead of some CAPTCHA that we spend months engineering or something. So it's possible, but it changes it a little bit. It makes it a little bit easier for us. So like the Tor network is one geographic location, and China is another geographic location. And of course, the interesting thing is the public bridges have actually all been harvested. So on a regular basis, people go to bridges.torproject.org and bridges@torproject.org, and they get all the bridges and put them into the Great Firewall. So they're actively harvesting things that take a great deal of effort to try to block access to the Tor network. And actually, at the moment, unless you have a private bridge, there's a really good chance that you can't use Tor in China right now, which is really extremely disappointing. But it's not because of protocol filtering. It's just because of IP port and IP address blocking in the firewall. So, unfortunately, because they are able to adapt and to grab this information, it's sort of it's kind of a cat and mouse game. But we did take it from something we can never win, which is a public list that we give to everyone, and we reduced it to a private list that sometimes is given to some people, but in some cases, like private bridges, they're not given away at all. The private bridges always continue to work. The public ones don't. So some people will have access to this network, and some people won't because they're spending lots of someone's taxpayer dollars to do that. An interesting side effect of this is that when they harvest, so I run one of the Tor directory authorities, they connect to me, potentially, or to someone else. And they pull down that list of IP addresses. And then they put that into the firewall. Does anybody see a problem with that? Like, this is kind of a funny, like an unintended consequence here would be that if all of the Tor network decided to do this, all the directory authorities could, for example, put in the IP addresses of every place where you request a visa to leave the country, and then all of a sudden none of those sites work anymore because they're all blocked. Right? So there's a kind of funny thing here. When you know that you are the source of information for censorship, you can affect the outcome of that censorship. We have not done that, and I think it's probably not a wise thing to to fuck with the bull unless you're willing to get the horns. But I guess those of you that know me know that I probably don't have a problem with that. So in the future, I can imagine that you might see something like that. Although I don't think the Tor project wants to do that, so it probably won't happen. But how much does what cost?
Pay you off.
To pay me off? Die in a fire. Sorry to all of those that have actually died in a fire. So here's the deal. If you run a bridge, you can actually help someone, right? You can help someone directly right now. I mean, I hate to sound like, you know, the Save the Children woman or something, but, you know. Unfortunately, censorship is a really big problem, and it's not trivial to make it go away because it's socially very successful. A lot of people really believe that they should not have access to information, and they should not be able to make decisions on their own, and that someone else is better making decisions for them, and that they don't need autonomy or agency in order to make changes in the world. I say fuck that, straight up, right? If you're not clapping, I'm a little disappointed. And if you are clapping, you can run a bridge and you can also do this, right? It doesn't take anything special. It's a peer-to-peer network. It's as easy as clicking, you know, an install and checking a box. And you literally help people. And while in some cases China is harvesting it, interestingly enough, the Chinese government isn't sharing their block list with other countries. So everybody else has to reproduce this effort, which means that since they're not doing that, your bridge is still useful in a lot of other places, like Iran or Canada or here or wherever you happen to be that does some sort of network censorship. That's it. Check that single box, and you can do it automatically. And you have no liability. If you do this, they can only connect to the rest of the Tor network. So there's no harm that can possibly come to you unless Tor were to become illegal, which it's not going to. Thanks.
Yep. Thank you, Jake. Jacob. In this last part, we'll be talking a little bit further detail on the technical operation of the Green Dam software that Anthony hinted about. And I think it makes a good transition from Jake's slides, the fact that the success of these Tor bridges and the Tor network in general has really sort of changed the game in terms of censorship. A lot of these entities, whether they're governments or other organizations trying to impose the censorship software, sort of have this fine balance they need to strike. Obviously, if China really wanted to crack down on their network, they could go with a whitelisted approach where they're only going to allow certain websites, but that would make for a lot of angry citizens and also a lot of, you know, outrage. So when they kind of play this whack-a-mole game where they're going after Tor bridges or trying to harvest these addresses of the bridges to block this, it turns out to be this sort of leaky sieve where these bridge IPs can be passed around privately and distributed in sort of a peer-to-peer social fashion. I think that when these entities or these governments are looking at this problem, they think, hey, why don't we push the same functionality that we have down to the end host, where we'll have more control, we'll actually be able to inspect upon the processes that the guest is running, have more flexibility, and have more protection against a user potentially trying to evade or remove the censorship functionality. Excuse me. So, sorry about the formatting there. I think some open office nuances. Green Dam is the host-based censorship software that was introduced by the Chinese government. This was, I think, early last year is when they first announced it. And originally they were saying, hey, all PCs that are sold in China are going to come with this Green Dam software. And there was, a bit of a hoopla around that announcement. And, they kind of slowly backed down as more and more information came out about this Green Dam software and, how port was built and some of the components that were stolen to build it. The Chinese government kind of backed down, and I think now it's still deployed in like internet cafes where users might not have full control over the computer, and I think they might be rolling it out to like schools and stuff too, or other government organizations.
Actually, they are out of funding, but they have target to move this product to sell in Taiwan.
Yeah, there was an announcement recently that they lost their government funding, the company that was developing the Green Dam software, which is not surprising because they did a pretty poor job. Again, no titles. I apologize for the formatting here, but these are the features of the Green Dam software, what Anthony briefly went over. They have a content filter, which looks at the actual content you're creating in these applications. Like if you're writing a Word document or writing in a text file, as Anthony showed the screenshot for, it will actually pop up that nice little warning, which, I don't know, what does that translate to, Anthony?
The Chinese message?
Yeah.
This message is inappropriate. It will be filtered.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there's also these network filtering capabilities that are deployed on the end host, but filter the network connections coming out of it. And they actually did steal some software or some blacklist from the CyberCitier company, just like straight up pulled down their blacklist and included them in the software, which was pretty blatant. And I think there were some lawsuits over that. Also, the image pornography filtering using the OpenCV package, which looks for these skin tones in the picture. So, that baby picture that Anthony showed has a lot of skin tone colors, so that's why it was considered inappropriate. But the bonus features are the interesting ones, where there were some very, very poor programming practices once you start digging into the Green Dam software. Trivial stuff like some of my colleagues at the University of Michigan, like the first thing they tried, they had a long URL that you click on. That URL is actually inspected by Green Dam, and it's just a straight smack, a stack smash, just with a long URL. This is like, 1990s programming mistakes. Those features are not necessarily what we're going to focus on today, but we're going to look at how Green Dam actually operates and how it actually hooks into your host, and sort of the techniques we use to actually unhook those hooks. So there's a wide range of interposition mechanisms that Green Dam employs. The one that you guys might be most familiar with, if you're familiar with any sort of rootkits or Ring 3 rootkits, they can hook these. There's a API called Set Windows Hook, which allows you to be notified of certain activity, like window messages or keyboard activity. So you can some poor keyloggers will use Set Windows Hook in order to get your keystrokes. It also uses the WinSock LSP, which is mostly a headache for normal users. The layered service provider functionality by WinSock. When people install LSPs and then try to remove them, it usually ends up borking the entire WinSock stack. These guys hooked a number of your traditional WinSock socket calls to inspect on the traffic that's going in and out of your system. And that's in one of the DLLs that's injected into all the processes on your machine. And lastly, there was a number of API hooks they use, which we'll talk a little bit about the techniques that are used to inject the DLLs and also hook the API calls. And there's a list of these, processes. I think Anthony showed a screenshot of particular processes by name that are targeted. So a lot of this stuff, if you change your process name, you won't be targeted. But you might not be able to do that without administrator privileges. So traditionally, if you're familiar with rootkits or API hooking, there's sort of two ways to go about it. You can go about it the good way and actually write a kernel driver, which will actually protect the integrity of your hooks in the user space applications. Or you can go the lazy route, which is what these guys did with the Ring3 rootkits or Ring3 hooking, which is when you actually implement these API hooking functionality in user space in memory of the process. So you're sort of on this even ground. So traditionally how this happens is you can either patch the import address table when you're actually injecting yourself into different processes on the system, or you can actually do sort of the trampolines where you will overwrite the first few bytes of each function or to jump to your hooking code and then rewrite the instruction that used to be there and jump back. And this is what's used in fairly poorly written rootkits and spyware. So what you would do is you inject into all the running processes on the system using this create remote thread functionality in the Windows platform, which is awesome functionality for rootkits and malware authors. But it can also be used, for good purposes. We're going to use it. But essentially, it allows you to actually, like it says, create a remote thread in a process, allocate memory in that process, put your executable code into that process, and then execute it within the context of that remote process. So by doing this, you can inject into all the running processes, hook the create process call inside each of those processes such that when they launch further processes, you're able to sort of spread virally into those new processes as well. So how GreenDAM works is it injects itself into this list of processes, whether it's Firefox or Notepad, and then we can actually go in and just uninject all of the GreenDAM code that's been put in there. So that's what I did. I wrote a tool called DAMBurst, which I think is interesting from the standpoint that us security researchers don't usually get to use our skills for good purposes, so to speak. The same techniques that DAMBurst uses are good for writing rootkits. But when we can actually use this functionality and our skills to help users who are facing the censorship, it's kind of a win-win. You get to do something that's technically interesting, but it also has a good side effect on society. So while there were these interesting vulnerabilities in the GreenDAM software, which would allow us to own all of China, it's always good to try to help the users as opposed to infecting them. So a few properties about DAMBurst, which we try to make more friendly for users who might be in restricted environments. It doesn't require administrator privileges. Obviously, if you have administrator privileges, you can remove or uninstall the GreenDAM software. But in many of these cases where you're an internet cafe or other public computers, you might not have you don't own the box, so you might not have admin rights, and you might not be able to remove the software. And we also made this a very transient functionality such that it doesn't leave behind a lot of evidence that you were running it. So if you were at an internet cafe and you bursted a few of the processes on that box in order to evade the censorship, and someone else came to that box later to look at it, they wouldn't know that you had done this, and you can kind of get away scot-free. And lastly, of course, it actually, by uninjecting the DAMBurst routines that are vulnerable, it actually increases the security of your computer because you're sort of cutting off these vulnerable code paths from being executed. So the injection process works like so. As I mentioned, these are all standard parts of Win32, which allow you to allocate memory in the remote processes and actually write your code into that process and then start a thread based out of that DLL that you just loaded. And similarly, for the patching of the WinSock LSPs, once we're actually running code inside of the process of the same process that's been infected with GreenDAM, we can simply overwrite the LSPs. Since removing them are a pain in the ass, we can simply overwrite them with no ops and just make sure that its functionality is effectively neutered. So we pop into each process, we patch out the functionality of GreenDAM, and then we unload it lastly to make sure that the vulnerable routines are no longer in there. And I wanted to show you guys a demo, but I don't have the VM on this laptop. But this is what it would look like. You're searching for porn or whatever you really want to find down there. Immediately when you hit enter, nothing happens. The connection's interrupted, and GreenDam has filtered that because it recognizes it as an offensive word. And you can see that in the little screenshot near the bottom there, you see the handler, inject lib, DB filter, surfguard. Those are all DLLs that GreenDam has injected. And in the GreenDam snapshot, you can see the applications that are specifically targeted by GreenDam in red. So you see Firefox and Notepad there have all of the DLLs injected into their process address space. And some of the other ones are just partially injected. They don't have all the same filtering routines injected into those processes. But you can select any process that you want to burst it, or you can just click burst all. Our code will go in there and burst all those processes, such that this is disabled. And you can search for your porn successfully, or your politically motivated material, whatever you're looking for that GreenDam does not approve of. So, you know, getting back to the sort of the theme of this, GreenDam was an initial attempt at this host-based sensorware. And as I mentioned, the news report that was recently released took all the government funding from this company that was developing GreenDam. And you know, from this first attempt, we can see that they did a pretty poor job. They didn't hire the right company. They didn't cross their T's and dot their I's before releasing this. And I don't think they were really aware of the backlash they would get and the quality of the code that they were releasing. So it is kind of scary to think that, you know, in the future, they're definitely going to do a much better job. I mean, they're not going to make the same mistakes. And I think that the success of the tools that Tor is providing, that Jacob is providing, will only drive more entities and government organizations to approach this censorship problem from the host-based level. So I think we'll undoubtedly see more of this host-based censorship software. And I did see just a few weeks ago an article about a new GreenDam or a host-based censorship software in Vietnam. And I haven't looked into that at all, but it's not surprising. I think we'll see a lot more of this in the future. And with that, Anthony, you want to conclude?
Yep. Thank you, John, actually, for presenting. And I would like to just, and also Jake, also present like a short brief of a conclusion. Actually, I suppose the internet censorship happens everywhere, okay? So however, we need to have a balance between them, the monitoring and privacy and free flow of information. And we are not I'm not target to take an 18-hour flight to here to bring my country. However, the problem is we have the issues, we have some areas to improve the technologies, okay? So how to get more step forward from the research. And special thanks to Jacob, John, and Abib, and also to PFD censorship, this talk with us then. And also I'm thankful to my teammates, San, Jackie, and Charles, and my professor, and Rocky. And he gives me a lot of insights in the censorship and the network monitoring. And my Chinese bloggers, like Isaac and Digital Boy, then the Cholima is purchased from Digital Boy in $100 in 10 Cholima. And also my wife and my dog's family. This is my head of army. And it's my elder sister. And Gigi is the head of, has a wife then. Thank you.